That was beautiful. Bravo.
Thank you. You're so nice. It's so nice to be with you and to see you.
And it's so nice to see you and to listen to you. And I think the last time we spoke, you were playing Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto. And the time before that, you were in the midst of your project doing all the concertos from the 1930s. I was thinking, you have so many concertos and romances and sonatas and different violin pieces in your head. What's it like to go back to Beethoven?
You know, I love to go back to play this piece anytime and to be here with this amazing orchestra and this amazing conductor and to play, you know, what is one of the great, great revelations, Beethoven's Violin Concerto. It's a dream. It's really a dream.
I've heard you talk about this piece in particular as a journey. The beginning is so lyrical. By the middle of the first movement, I found myself singing along in my head with you.
Yeah, you know, I remember being a child and hearing it for the first time. I had a recording of the great violinist David Oistra playing this, and I just listened to it over and over again. You know, then later I learned other recordings, and I do remember Henrik Schering, the great violinist, coming to Israel when I was young and playing this piece with the orchestra. Later he came to New York where I lived as kind of an adolescent. I loved his playing. I loved this piece. I loved the performance. I went to every rehearsal, every performance. It was maybe a couple of years ago. I had an occasion to play this piece. I think it was in Indianapolis, and the orchestra started playing the the long tutti at the beginning of the piece, and the violins start, you know, the melody goes from... It goes from major, it transforms to minor. And then Beethoven kind of spins it. And there's this, as I heard the orchestra playing this, I saw this young woman in the orchestra. She must have been, you know, maybe early teens, 12 years old, maybe 13, probably not more than 14, you know, just a young woman listening to this. And she had this expression on her face, and it was just, she was like, this is the most beautiful melody I've ever heard in my entire life. And that's exactly right. That's exactly what this piece does. It's just, there's something very profound about the way he writes this music. People talk about the perfection and the craft of it, but ultimately it is something that just touches all of us.
Well, I was thinking, just as human friends tap into different parts of us, do all of these violin concertos that you play, many of which are very different from one another, do they all tap into a different side of you?
Yeah, I guess I always think our job, I think we've talked about this before, I always think our job is like the job of an actor. You know, really we're supposed to take what's on the page, what's left to us by the composer, the ideal that's on the page, and bring it to life for our audience. It's very inspiring to be around Beethoven, you know, around his music and around the scores. And yeah, so I think that's exactly right. It somehow speaks to different parts of us.
It's amazing because this was written in 1806, I think.
That's correct,
and
yeah.
So he knew he was going deaf, and it was a challenging time for him personally. Do you hear that in the music?
You know, it's amazing to me when I think of the first performance of this piece, because apparently it really was a flash of inspiration for him. And he wrote it very, very quickly. The legend was that the ink was still drying on the page as the musicians rehearsed in the morning.
Wow.
For the concert that night. And the violinist Franz Clement virtually sight-read the Beethoven Violin Concerto at the premiere. And I think he was a composer in the zone. We talked a little bit about basketball before. And you know how they talk about, oh, so-and-so's in the zone. You know, it's really a very special place in your mind where suddenly it just becomes pure basketball, you know? And I think Beethoven was really just pure music at that time. Just the inspiration is so clear. And it's not like any concerto that came before. It's so much bigger, not just in terms of the orchestra is bigger, the length of the piece is bigger. The whole scope, the whole the story that it tells, the whole emotional journey of the piece is just that much bigger than anything that came before. It really is revolutionary in the way that only Beethoven can be revolutionary.
Are there any particular parts of it that you continually go back to or play with?
You know, there's a kind of a thread that runs through the piece. You know, if you want to talk about the plot of the piece, of the storytelling, you know, it first comes in a very military kind of minor mode, you know, the... You know, this kind of melon, you know, as the piece goes on, this somehow transforms by the second movement into transform. And then finally, when we get to the last movement, it actually comes in the correct key in D major, and it becomes, you know, that uplifting dance, you know, the rondon. So every moment of this piece is inspired and touching. And yeah, just we're very lucky to hear it and to play it.
It has everybody moving in their seats, I think, by the end of it.
Hopefully.
Now, your schedule is very, very busy. You go from Philadelphia to Texas to Brussels, and you're playing Brahms as well, and...
Bartok second, yes. That's right. This month, it's composers beginning with the letter B. Yes.
I was going to say, what do you do to recharge?
You know, this is a little bit busier month for me than most, but yeah, I don't know. Somehow, over the years, I've worked out my routine when I'm on the road, you know? I know what I do when I wake up. I know what I do during the day. I know how to prepare for rehearsals and concerts. So in a way, I'm comfortable with that. When I come home and then I'm with my family and I want to be around for everybody, that I find that in a way much more challenging because so many things are happening to so many people that you kind of have to improvise and go day by day, hour by hour.
Well, we were talking about sports and kids doing sports and how watching those games can be really consuming.
It's so inspiring, so inspiring. I love watching my kids do stuff, you know. But anyway, just looking at people doing it, there's something very inspiring about, and you know, these kind of human endeavors, you know. To think, it's a little bit like what you say. There's... What they're doing is a reflection a little bit on us, on what we could do or what we are capable of doing. My dad once said something about, you know, personally, each one of us really doesn't know much. You know, we don't know much. We're just one person. But when you think of the collective knowledge of humans, you know, or the collective activities of humans, that's something really pretty formidable, pretty amazing.
Yeah. So what's next for you? Do you have any projects coming up?
We did just record both the Beethoven and the Brahms Violin Concerto with the Knights in New York, the Knights Orchestra, and Maestro Eric Jacobson. And very excited about that. We're working on that now in post-production, and we're also finishing up a recording of the Korngold Violin Concerto that was with David Robertson conducting in the St. Louis Symphony. And hopefully that will come out soon. You know, and there's another recording that we made of Prokofiev's first violin concerto with the Singapore Symphony and Lan Shui.
Wow. Well, it's great because you founded your own label, Canary Classics.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so very lucky to be able to own my own music.
When we were talking about old friends and maybe concertos being like old friends, I was thinking about your instrument. And in all the times we've talked, we've never actually talked about why it's named what it's named.
Oh, right. Well, I have to confess that I have been playing the Polignac Stradivarius for more than 30 years now. And that violin was named after the Countess Polignac, who was, you know, a patron of the arts on the court of Louis XIV, but also very involved with Venetian musical life. Yeah, many of the concertos we know and love by Vivaldi were commissioned by the Countess Polignac, the Princess Polignac. And in fact, she probably was the one who brought the Four Seasons out of Italy to be performed in Paris for the first time. So I always like to think that violin has something to do with Vivaldi. The violin I'm playing on this week is on loan from a foundation in Washington, D.C., and through an organization called In Consortium in New York. It's a new violin for me, but it's 300 years old. Wow. It's the 1719 Stradivarius, which I guess is called the Haupt Stradivarius. I think there's some ambiguity because there are two Haupt Stradivariuses, but this is the one that's 1719 Haupt. That's not the other one.
Is it difficult to go from one violin to the next?
I find it really fascinating and interesting. You know, each violin has different personality. You know, you're talking about very tiny microfibers of wood that vibrate a certain way. And there are many different kind of characteristics. It really is a personality, you know. So it's like you say, it's like a friend, like a new friend or an old friend. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Gil Shaham.
Thank you.